Okay.
Yes.
Good morning, everyone. Week two of our series. So before we start, today is Tu Bishvat. It's really the Rosh Hashanah, the new year of trees, which in a general sense connects very much to what we do every Thursday morning, because the Talmud tells us that the world is divided up into inanimate objects, things that grow like trees, the animal kingdom, and the human being. And Kabbalah teaches us that we each have within us all four elements, like we have the inanimate among us, the growth, and so on. And they say that each part of our personality refers to something else, and the growth aspect of our personality, the tree aspect of who we are, refers to our emotions, which is exactly the series that we're working on. We're talking about emotional responses and things like that. So very much connected. Growth and emotional growth and well-being, very much connected to what we're doing. But today is a special Tu Bishvat because it's Rona's birthday, meaning Rona's Jewish real birthday. All right? They always say, we also want to welcome Penina here today, Rona's daughter. Am I allowed to say how young you are? Am I allowed to say how young you are?
93.
Oh, there you are. Not old, 93.
I'm an old tree already.
No, you're a strong tree, not an old tree. And it's really a special day. We talked a lot about real birthdays, Jewish birthdays, and what kind of energy and holiness and blessing it comes with. So first I want to begin by wishing Rona a big, big happy birthday. And lots of gezlange gezunte yorn, as they say. Rona always likes to talk a bit of Yiddish, so... And with strength and nachas and only good things. And I want to invite, in honor of Rona's birthday and to Tu Bishvat, I want to invite you all at the end of today to gather around. We'll pull a table towards the middle and eat some fruit. It's a big thing to eat fruit. We'll eat it in honor of Rona. There's, I think, a cake coming as well. But and wish her well and connect to the specialness of the day. So let's do our topic first. And now it happens to be, nothing happens to be. Everything, as we know, is bashkacha pratit. Everything is by divine providence. It happens to be that you'll see towards the end of today's discussion, the concept that we're going to talk about, some of the concept we talk about, is exactly Rona. You'll see at the end. I'm not going to give it away, but we'll get there. So let's do the shir, and then we'll have a little celebration. So first of all, let's begin by reviewing today. Not what we always review, but today's review is actually relevant to today's discussion as well. So it's important just to review a bit more stronger this time than we normally do. So I've given you a little test at the beginning of the handout, as you can see. So when we talk about normally struggles, yeah, daily struggles, we're talking about emotional responses, right? Now let's even get the next one. An initial thought of a toxic emotion makes me a what kind of person?
Miserable.
Sorry?
Miserable.
No. So when we have an initial thought of a toxic emotion, as we said yesterday, what does it make you? An initial thought. What does it make you?
Human.
A normal person, correct. Very important, because we should never beat ourselves up for having those thoughts, especially initially. That's what we spoke about yesterday, right? And then we talked about at great length that the initial response, therefore, after we had the initial thought, what is our first strategy, which is a general strategy for all distracting thoughts, is...
think of something else.
Exactly. Hesach Hadas. Of distracting ourselves completely away from it, not even fighting from it, even distracting, as we learned last week, even distracting ourselves a bit away from ourselves. Like not to be too involved in ourselves the whole time, so we can be less, take ourselves a little bit less seriously, so we can... Anyway, it's a hard thing to do, as we said last week. We talked about it last week. And we talked about all these different types of things, like worry and anger and rage and things like that. How do you think of something else? How do you distract yourself? We gave different ideas, thinking of something else, doing something, perhaps kindness, to do something for someone else, getting into a happy mood, listening to music, singing a song, dancing. All this stuff is not easy, initially particularly, but if we can master it to a certain degree, it's very liberating. Now, we did say last week, also this is important to today's discussion, that there are three types of emotional distracting thoughts. One is thinking and thoughts that we just create. The reality is just something we've created within ourselves. It has no basis to circumstances that is happening outside, right? It's just something, you know, we're ruminating about something that really has no foundation. We think we said something wrong to someone. We're beating ourselves up for something. It's got no foundation and it makes no sense. It's our own reality. The second thing is, sometimes it does have a bit of a reality from something coming outside, but... Come in. It's coming out of this funny place. Just before you, there's some handouts there on that table. Just take some. Yeah. But really, we're just exaggerating it. So that's a small thing. It happened, but we're ruminating in a way of exaggeration. Then the third thing was that it actually does have a foundation. You know, there are things going on in our life which cause us to ruminate and cause us to worry or cause us to think about things. It might be finance, it might be health. These are real things. These are legitimate things. These are cause anguish and cause lots of different emotional responses and thinking. But we still have to deal with it, right? It's still not good for us if we overthink and we think about it in a negative way. So what we concluded last week is that initially, the response, in order not to get entangled with it, the concept we spoke about last week called Hesach Hadas, distracting ourselves from the thought, is a strategy for every type of thought. The question is what we do later. There are certain things that we do need to then go back and strategize. Like we spoke about last week, sometimes you have to set aside time when you're in control, when you're more composed, when you're calmer, and then deal with it. By learning something about it, by understanding how we can reframe our thinking, understanding why the thought process is not good for us, why it's not healthy, and kind of deal with that as we go along. So one of those strategies we're going to talk about today with a specific area. So today's area that we're going to talk about is when we are not content, discontent, and jealousy. They're connected, they're not exactly the same thing. But they're connected, right? So let's first of all, why do I say that they're different? Because obviously they're connected, because when I feel jealous of someone, it's because I'm not happy with what I have, right? I'm not happy with the things that I have. So obviously they're connected, but they're different. Why are they different? Let's just deal with jealousy a little bit. I want to talk more about discontent, but let's talk about jealousy, because jealousy can be quite powerful and quite irrational. And normally what jealousy comes from is, or what it's fueled by, is the concept of our own ego, our own egocentricity, where we need to be on top, and the erroneous thinking that my prominence, my importance, my success is connected with the failure of others, right? So in other words, it's that erroneous thinking that my identity, my who I am, is created a lot by the perception of others, and therefore it bothers me or threatens me when someone else is more successful, someone else has more than me, and so on. I think many years ago I told you this shtetl story. There was once a guy who was observing, there was a rabbi in a shtetl, and he used to often deal with questions. People would come and knock on his door and ask him questions. Or he would deal with litigation, where two people would have a financial dispute, whatever the case was, and he would adjudicate, and he would be the judge, and he would listen to both sides, and he would then paskin, as they say, right? He would rule who's right and who's wrong. So one day, someone was observing that two people came to the rabbi and had a financial dispute over a very, very small sum of money. Like, it was not so significant, but that doesn't matter. The rabbi's role is to take every case seriously. And he listened to the two sides, and he ruled in the favor of one person. So the other person, who lost the case, blew up at the rabbi. He says, "What kind of rabbi are you anyway? You just probably favored him, probably did you a favor," and he just... they let him have it, he got very angry. Someone else that was there walked over to him afterwards and he says, "I need to ask you a question. Because last week," this was a guy who hung around the rabbi's house. "So last week you came to ask the rabbi a shayla, a halachic problem." This was often the case in the shtetl. And people would bring the rabbi a chicken. You've heard of this? They would bring the rabbi. Why? Because in those days they didn't have butchers like we have today. So when someone wanted to eat chicken, they would go buy a live chicken. They would then take it to the sheikhet, the slaughterer, and then the woman or the husband, whatever, would then open the chicken. Now, there's a whole process. You have to open the chicken, take out the stuff, and you have to then salt it and prepare it. And it was all done in-house. It wasn't done in the butcher, right? And then sometimes what happened was that sometimes a woman or a man would open up a chicken and they would see a halachi question, like so one of the limbs is discolored or there's a problem with the lung or whatever the case is. There are certain things that people used to know, be familiar with this. And you know that sometimes it could actually render the chicken treif. So I noticed that you brought a chicken to the rabbi last week and you asked the rabbi the question, and the rabbi with a very heavy heart, because you know people, they were stricken with poverty in those days, and a chicken was a big thing. They wouldn't even eat chicken during the week. Normally it was only for Shabbos, right? And the rabbi looked, and he looked it up, and he thought, and with a heavy heart, he told you, the chicken is not kosher. And you said, thank you very much, rabbi. Okay, next time, hopefully it'll be okay. And you went away. So he says, I want to ask you a question. I don't understand. Last week you brought a chicken to the rabbi, and the rabbi said the chicken was not kosher, and it was a big loss for you. In fact, the chicken was worth more than the money you lost today when you lost the court case. And you were okay. He said, thank you, rabbi, with respect. The rabbi is the authority. You surrendered. And you went away and the chicken was treif and you couldn't use it. And today you lost a case which was worth much less money than the chicken and you blew up. So he says in Yiddish, was verstehst du dich? He says, what don't you understand? Okay, I lost the chicken last week, but this week he won. That's the problem. Right? And that's the source. That's the source of jealousy. Yeah. I saw something yesterday as I was preparing this. I just came across something interesting in an article. It says a story was told of an envious person who was offered a very generous deal. He was told, make whatever wish you want and it's going to be granted. However, you need to know, whatever you wish for, your neighbor's going to have twice as much. So he didn't know what to do, right? He's a very envious, jealous person. He says, if I ask for $1 million, he's going to get $2 million. No good, right? If I ask for a 25-room mansion, he's going to get a 50-room mansion. So he's going to be better than me. It's no good. So he says, he reached a decision. He says, take out one of my eyes. Because then he says, he knew that the other guy would be completely blind, right? Now, it's a very bad story and a very silly story, but the truth is that we all have a streak of that sometimes in us, right? Sometimes it creeps in, the feeling of jealousness. Now, jealousness is not, being jealous is not just an action, it's an emotion, it's a feeling. And maybe we don't have it sometimes with money, but we have it with other things, success, prominence, COVID, as they say. Right? But sometimes people get threatened by the success of others, and it's a terrible thing, and it's got to do with our own ego and our own, actually, fragility, our own insecurity, because if we measure ourselves by the success of others, we really we're not doing very well. And therefore, the concept is, of course, that we need to measure ourselves by who we are and be content or be happy with what we are given, right? It's interesting that in the Ten Commandments, which happens to be this week's Parsha, actually, this coming week in Shabbat, in Shul, we're going to read the Ten Commandments. But in the Ten Commandments, in the Torah, is mentioned twice. And we know the Tenth Commandment is Lo Tachmod, which means do not covet. You're not supposed to covet someone else's house, someone else's thing, right? But the language in this week's Parsha and later on in Deuteronomy and Dvarim, where it's mentioned again, is different. This week it's Lo Tachmod, and later on in the Torah, Lo Titaveh, which means you shouldn't desire. So there was a great sage called the Sefer Achinuch, and he explains the following. He says it's two different mitzvot. He says this week it's more practical mitzvah. Lo Tachmod, the Talmud says, it means you shouldn't desire something that someone else has to the point when you go and harass them, right, and you drive them crazy until they sell it to you or until they give it to you. That's more of a practical application. That's a terrible thing. But he says that. But the Torah then repeats it later on in a different language. The language is Lo Titaveh. You shall not desire, because even if you don't do anything about it, the mere fact that you want something that belongs to someone else is a toxic thing. It's not good for you. It doesn't affect the other person necessarily unless you arrest them, but even if you don't arrest them, you just have that desire within, that strong desire within you, that in itself becomes a problem, and that's a prohibition almost in the Torah, because it's bad for us to want something that belongs to someone else. Okay, so that's strong feelings of jealousy, and I wanted to sort of just go through that. But actually, it's not what really we're talking about today. We're talking about something which is much more subtle, related to jealousy, but it's much more subtle. It's more the idea of being just unhappy with what we have, discontent. We're not jealous of someone, anyone in particular. It's just we're not happy with our own situation, with our own lot on any level, right? What that brings to is the following. You see, we all want happiness, right? We all want serenity. We all want to feel settled and calm and serene and be okay. And sometimes we find that we don't seem to be able to achieve it. For why? Because we always think, I'm going to be okay when I have this, right? You know, when my kids grow up and stop annoying me in the house and I'll be able to calm down. When, which doesn't actually work, but when, when you grow up, you find that your kids are your kids forever, right? Yes, right. Yeah. No. When I have that extra bedroom, I won't feel so cramped. I just need that extra renovation, you know what I'm saying? When I have that. That extra $10,000, that's going to make all the difference, right? It's always when I have something, when I have a job, when I have this, then I'm going to feel happy, right? How about now? Now I'm not happy. Why? I'm never happy now. Because the present always seems imperfect, too imperfect to give me happiness, right? And that's a problem. That's a problem, discontent. And probably more common than jealousy. I mean, everyone is jealous sometimes, and it's a bad thing. We know jealousy destroys a person, the prekei avot, the ethics of the fathers tells us that, you know, lust, overindulgence, jealousy, and pursuit of personal glory are the three things that will destroy human experience. But, okay, most people maybe contain their jealousy and they're not over jealous, but this feeling of discontentment many people do have. And many people have the thoughts of discontentment and the emotions and the feeling of why don't I have this and why isn't it like that? And when this person becomes nicer, when I have this bedroom, when I have the, you know, when all that kind of thing, right? Why don't we have that? So the perspective we have to develop is a number of different components. There's first of all the perspective, and then there's also strategies of how to internalize that perspective. So the first thing, we have to talk generally about a perspective. Again, when that feeling plagues us, try and distract yourself. But you also have to deal with it at some point. Like, why am I discontent? What's happening? What's the belief system that's causing the discontent feelings to come into me every so often, right? So first of all, we have to develop a general perspective, which is really a foundational perspective. And it comes with a few components, things that we've talked about before, but it goes like this. We believe, first of all, that everything happens for a reason, right? That's clear. We've talked about it many, many times. Fundamental to Jewish thinking, hashgacha pratit, nothing happens without God's guidance. Everything that I have now or everywhere that I am now is where I'm supposed to be. It's what I'm supposed to have. It's what I'm supposed to be doing, right? Number one. But the second part of that process, which is equally important, not everything happens by God's divine intervention, by divine providence, but also that everything happens for a purpose, because human being was created for a purpose, right? And a purpose is something that we have to try and live each day. Each day we have to try and live with achieving our purpose and our value system and living a life of meaning, as we've talked about so many times, right? And hopefully God gives us those resources to be able to live with a purpose, right? But my purpose today, to fulfill my purpose today, whatever resources I have, that's what I'm supposed to have, right? So let me give you an example. It's something similar that we've talked about before. And it's important to develop a perspective about two things can be true at the one time. So one of the morning blessings that we make every day, that we praise God for the, you know, different things that He gives us, is Hamesh'in Mitz'adei Gavre, which means that God, we believe, that God guides the steps of the human being. What does that mean? That means that wherever you land up, that's where you're supposed to be. Now, of course, you get up in the morning and you plan your day, that's true. But it doesn't always work out that way, as we know. So sometimes, let's say you're traveling somewhere and you get lost, right? Or you're on a plane, as we've spoken about many times, the plane is diverted and you land up in Brisbane instead of Sydney. It's happened to many people, right? And we get very frustrated. Of course, the Jewish perspective to stay calm is, if I landed up in Brisbane, I'm supposed to be in Brisbane today. Now, it's very annoying. Something happening at home. My kids are waiting for me. Million reasons why it's frustrating. But the bottom line is, if I landed up in Brisbane, or I got lost somewhere, I'm meant to be in Brisbane. Right? I'm not sure why I'm picking on Brisbane. It's just, that's an example. Okay, but now, what I have to do now is, I have to try and think, okay, what purpose, what meaning can I accomplish while I'm in Brisbane? Okay, fair enough? In other words, that means I've got to do something there. Might be to study something, might be to do someone a favor, might be to do a mitzvah, I don't know, might be to contact someone, whatever the case is. But there's something that I have to create that's meaningful, rather than sitting and moping and being frustrated for the 10 hours I'm going to have to spend in Brisbane. I need to remember that I'm supposed to be there, and if I'm supposed to be there, I got to find out what I can do that's meaningful and purposeful while I'm there. Now, at the same time, and this is very important, it doesn't mean that we always defeat us. In other words, it doesn't mean that we always just say, okay, well, I'm supposed to be in Brisbane, but I'll spend the next week here. No, of course not, right? Life has a plan, and we need to try and live by that plan, and there is no contradiction by being extremely calm and accepting that I'm lost and I'm in somewhere else and I've landed up somewhere else where I didn't want to be, and at the same time trying to find my way back, right? So it's not a contradiction to this philosophy when you take the Brisbane analogy to go over to the counter and say, listen, I really need to get to Sydney as quick as I can. Could you please put me on the next flight? That's not a problem. That's okay. The two things can be true at the same time. While I'm here, I'm meant to be here. I'm also meant to live a responsible life and an organized life and have a plan and a responsible plan of what I'm going to do, what I'm going to accomplish. So therefore, I also try and make sure that I get the next flight out. But I guess a lot of things come from this almost liberating perspective. I'm not saying it's easy to implement, but it means we'll be less annoyed if they tell us the flight is booked. We won't scream at them. We won't scream at ourselves. We won't get frustrated. We won't lose ourselves. Because while I'm here, I'm meant to be here. I will try and get out of here as soon as I can, but while I'm here, I'm meant to be here. Right? Is it? Yeah? Makes sense? Now, why do I bring that? Because the same thing is with everything in life. Right? I wake up in the morning and I'm supposed to live a life of meaning and purpose. My day might not work out the way I want it to. I might not have the resources that I think I'm supposed to have. God forbid, I might even not have the health that I'm supposed to have for today. Right? So, again, this is hard, right? It's a hard perspective, but it's a liberating perspective. The real perspective, Jewishly, is two things going to happen at the same time. I'm going to try and correct my situation. If I'm going through a challenge, if I'm going through a hard day, if I'm going through a health challenge, if I'm going through a financial challenge, if I'm going through a family challenge, whatever I'm going through, of course, I'm going to try and correct that. But at the same time, I'm going to believe, and this is where the discontentment needs to disappear, or be minimized at least, I'm going to believe that what I have today, what I have now, is what I'm meant to have. And what I have today is the resources I have to make this day meaningful and purposeful. By the way, that meaning and purpose might be a little bit different than I imagined, right? It might be in building resilience. It might be in doing something different that I was planning to do because I don't have the resources to do what I wanted to do. But maybe I just have to do something else that's meaningful and purposeful. Maybe I have to be an inspiration to others and show that you can have emunah, you can have deep faith even when you're going through a challenge. Whatever that meaning is, right? But this concept of when I will be there or when I will have this, then I'll be able to do what I'm supposed to do, and then I'll be happy, and then I'll be able to live a meaningful life, and then I'll be able to help people, and then I'll be able to do this and that. That's an error. Because where you are today is where you're meant to be. What you have today is what you're supposed to have. And not only are you supposed to have and you're meant to have, that's your resources, that's your tools for today to make today meaningful. Yeah, we good? Easy to talk about it. Much harder to implement, but it is a perspective. Now we'll see how to apply that perspective, right? In other words, I'm still going to work, as I said, on improving things, but what I have in the present is for my purpose for today, it's my fulfillment for today, it's my contentment for today, and that's what I'm going to use to its fullest to make today meaningful. In other words, my circumstances may change tomorrow, but my values will be the same, as we've talked about many times. My values are the same as yesterday and tomorrow, and the resource I have today is what I have to live to the fullest of my values. There's a very fascinating story in the Talmud, a cryptic story. As I was preparing this, I reminded him I haven't revisited the story for many years. I read it once, I mean, I read the story in the Talmud, but I read this explanation in one of Rabbi Tursky's books many years ago. There was a great sage in the Talmud called Rabbi Yochanan. And he was older already and he got unwell. I guess people felt that this is like towards the end. He was really, really unwell. So a number of his students came in to visit him. And I guess he was unwell and uncomfortable, maybe a little bit down. So his students tried to strengthen him. And firstly, all his students came over to him and told him the wonderful accomplishments that he'd accomplished through his life. So one student said, you know, your Torah, the Torah knowledge that you had and you taught is so amazing. The other one said, the people who you were kind to, or whatever, they told him different things. And he kind of didn't really respond. He kind of half ignored them. It didn't do the trick, put it that way. Until Rabbi Hanina, I think it was, one of his students, came over to him and said, Rabbi, he said one phrase. He says, Chavivin Yisurin. Suffering, now don't take this wrong, I haven't explained it. He said, because no one should ever suffer, but suffering could be precious. And Rabbi Yochanan perked up and he said, I need to hear more. I need to listen. What was going on? Obviously, we never, especially the suffering of someone else, we never accept that. We never say, oh, you can get yourself together. We don't do that, right? Because our job is to always pray for everyone's welfare, including our own, but especially other people. And no one should suffer, and everyone should have all the blessings that they need on all levels. But something under the surface was happening. What happened was like this. He was in a new situation. He was old, he was suffering, he was not well. So his Talmidim, his disciples, decided to try to cheer him up. What do? They tried to highlight all his accomplishments and his greatness from the past. Right? And Rabbi Yochanan's unspoken response to that was, I'm not interested. That's last year. It's wonderful. Thank you very much. That's not what's relevant to me now. What's relevant to me now is, in fact, on the contrary, I've lived that life of Jewish learning. I've lived that life of teaching people. I've lived that life of helping people. And you're highlighting something that I did in the past, but you're highlighting something that I cannot do now. That doesn't help me. It's not cheering me up. I'm restricted now. And you're highlighting that. You didn't say that in words, but that's maybe why I was ignoring them. I'm worried about the present. I'm trying to understand, what do I do now? When all the things I lived for all my life, I cannot do now. So Rabbi Hanina walked up to him and whispered in his ear, something that he had taught them, Chavivin Yisurin. You can take what you have now and make it precious. We don't wish it on you. We're praying for your recovery. But for the present, there's something you can do with even that suffering to bring meaning. And he says, I need to hear more. This is what I need to hear. I'm trying to work out, I'm trying to process. He says, how do I serve God today differently, but still with meaning and purpose? Because what I have today, obviously I'm supposed to have today. I'm going to still pray for recovery. I'm going to try to get better. I'm going to go to the best doctor. I'm going to say lots of tilim and ask other people to pray too. But that's okay, because that's what we're supposed to do. We're not supposed to remain and surrender to suffering. But the challenge that I have now, I know I can turn it into something precious. I hear what you're saying. This is encouraging for me. I know maybe that I can inspire people that even I can talk about faith, maybe. He didn't say this, but maybe I can talk about accepting. I can talk about using it for some meaning, helping other people, maybe for more empathy, whatever it is. I don't know what it is, but it is. That's the perspective. In other words, the resources I have today is what I have today, what I'm supposed to have today. And what I'm supposed to have today is for meaning and purpose. And I cannot let that define me. And I cannot let the deficiency define me, as painful as it might be. Okay, sometimes it's just because we always, you know, the Talmud says, he who has 100 wants 200, he has 200 wants 400. Okay, so there's a general problem that we have, that we always want more. But even if it's not just wanting more, even if it's something that's legitimately problematic and legitimately painful, the idea is that when I do want to be over this, but when I'm over this, then I'm going to start living a life of meaning, that's problematic. Because I'm always looking, I'm never in the present. And we try and flip that perspective to say, what I have, even though I don't want what I have today and I'm going to try and get over it, but what I have today, that's the resource, that's what I'm supposed to have today, and that's what I'm supposed to use to live purpose and meaning. Yeah? Okay. But now the question is, it's a very important foundational perspective, but how do we get there? What's the tools? How do we practice this? I should mention again, you know, we talk about things that are difficult because you always talk about things in its absolute so we can aspire. We won't always get there. We'll have our bad days. Of course we will. But it's an idea of trying to liberate ourselves from being stuck in that paradigm and at least have the ability to sometimes move beyond it or a little bit beyond it or change things a little bit and maybe a lot eventually. But it's a more than aspirational sort of journey, right? So, there are many, many ways that we can, many perspectives that we can develop as tools to develop this foundational idea. Sorry, I think it's time for an infusion over here, Eric. Can we put on the air a little bit? And I have to learn how to get this right, so it shouldn't be too hot or too cold. I don't know.
You don't have to do the rib according to my hormones, it's fine.
What's that?
It doesn't have to be according to my hormones, it's fine.
No, it's I'm hot. Okay. Good.
It says it's on heat, just by
the way. It says on heat? Oh, it shouldn't be. No, don't put it on if it's on heat. Oh, gosh. Let's get Josh in here. Josh? I'm cool. Okay, we're good. We're good. We're good. Okay, so. Kabbalah teaches us a very interesting thing. Kabbalah teaches us that in the world there's good and bad. Right? Now, when God first created the world, I didn't mean Kabbalah teaches us the good and bad, that's the reality. But now we know even without Kabbalah. But what Kabbalah teaches us is the following. When God created the world, you know the story of the first sin, the tree, right? So the snake came and convinced Adam and Eve to eat from the fruit and so on. So God created the world. He created purity, created holiness, but he also created what we call in Kabbalah, klipa. Klipa means impurity and the embodiment of evil and so on. But the initial design of the creation of the world is that impurity was contained. It was like in a capsule. It wasn't mixed with the good, right? It was in a capsule. And basically what Kabbalah teaches us, it was embodied and contained within the snake. But when the Chet Eitz Hadas, since the sin, the very first sin, a few hours after the creation of Adam and Eve, took place, the world descended into a lower level where good and bad became mixed. And therefore we have this principle, I'll say it in Hebrew first, then translate, in Tov Belo Ra Velo Ra Belo Tov. There's no absolute good without a bit of bad. There's no absolute bad without a bit of good. There's always a mixture, right? Now, why is that an important thing in terms of our personal growth? The Rebbe wrote about this a lot, and you know, taking that book again. He says, there's always going to be something to feel down about. Always. Right? And therefore, the primary path to happiness is we have to proactively train our minds. Some people have this more naturally, by the way. But we have to proactively train our minds to focus on the good. Right? When we feel down and we feel bleak and we feel that the world is dark and everything's going wrong, there's always some good. And it's a matter of training our mind to look at the good. Right? In other words, I'm connecting to the previous idea. In order to maintain this perspective, that everything I have today is what I'm meant to have, and it's a tool, and it's the resources I need to live a life of meaning and purpose today, I also have to train my mind in order to do that, to where's the good here? Like, what is the good that I have? I know it's a bit of a dark day, but where's the good? So we have to kind of train our minds to focus on that good, right? The Baba Chereba once wrote to a woman, and he said the following, I'm going to quote. He said, I have not, God forbid, lost hope that eventually you will see the good in life, including the good in your own life. and moreover that you will feel it in your heart as well. This is especially so considering the Hasidic teaching that in your world everything is composed of both good and bad, and human beings must choose which aspects they will emphasize, contemplate, and pursue. In everyone's life there are two paths, to see the good or to see the opposite. Now this isn't always easy, because sometimes the negative, the bad, could be quite big, right? Could be quite severe. But there's always good. And our job is to exercise that choice. So it's a choice, as he explains later. You need to internalize that idea that it is a choice. And our choice is to actually look, pursue, identify the good. Because there's always good somewhere. There's always good in there. Most times the good is more than we think it is. Just to identify it, right? Sometimes we choose to focus on the negative and the negative is actually smaller than the positive. Sometimes not, but sometimes it is. And therefore we have to learn and train ourselves to focus on that good. What's interesting is, it's not just about our situation in life, the resources that we have, or the health that we have, or the tools that we have, but actually this is a very, very fundamental concept in relationships, right? Because this principle, maybe it's hard news for some of us, but this principle that every bad has good and every good has bad applies to human beings as well, i.e. no one is perfect, right? Now, of course, when people enter into relationships, whatever relationship it might be, whether it's friends, whether it's business associates, whether it's employers, employees, bosses, whatever, right? Or marriage, or any type of relationship. Normally, the relationships that we choose to enter into, we enter into because we saw the perfection, we saw the good stuff, right? Otherwise, we wouldn't have entered into the relationship. And then we get really badly disappointed when we discover the imperfections, right? Now, sometimes, like I always say, in relationships, one has to be clear. There are times when relationships are mismatches and they just can't work and they need to come to an end. But, and that's the Torah gives room for that. But sometimes it doesn't need to. And part of the problem is because people do not tolerate imperfection. What do you mean? I went into this because it was so amazing. I chose this guy as a boss or as a colleague because everyone was saying such unbelievable things about it. I married this woman or this man because it was amazing. But no one's perfect. And therefore, sometimes it's about remembering what the good is. Sometimes when the imperfections rise to the surface, sometimes it clouds the good stuff. And we start focusing on the bad. And when we focus on the bad, it becomes all bad. You know, it's interesting that I've shared this with you before, but in Pirkei Avot, in Ethics of the Fathers, when it talks about judging people favorably, right? It says, Dan et kol adam lekaf sechut, which literally, contextually means judge every human being favorably, right? But if you look very carefully at the Hebrew, it's a very interesting thing. It doesn't say judge every adam, every person favorably. It says, Heve dan judge et kol ha'adam. Kol ha'adam is different to kol adam. Kol adam means every person. Kol adam means the whole of the person. Very different. We always... Contextually, it means judge every person favorably. But then it should have really said, Heve dan kol adam. Judge every human being favorably. It doesn't say that. It says, judge kol ha'adam, the whole person, favorably. Right? Which means, the Pirkei Avot is teaching us, when you judge someone with imperfections, one of the ways to judge them favorably is to remember that there's a whole person there. They're not all bad. There's a whole person. Dan et kol ha'adam, look at the whole person. There's so much good in that person. There's so much good in that person that you might have forgotten. There's so much that you can use, there's so much you can learn from, there's so much you can be complimented by, right? Why are you focusing on those small imperfections? So the same thing, that training ourselves to look at the good is that concept of training ourselves to make that choice, to shift away from the negative and focus on the positive. Not always easy. Sometimes the negative is really painful, but there's still blessings there. Which, the reason that it's hard today particularly, and I think people struggle with this, is because we find it particularly hard today to handle discomfort and to handle imperfection. And that's a result of the society that we live in. It's a result of affluence, a result of having things, right? And we don't do well with hardship. It's one of those things today that's more around than previous generations, right? You know, I'll tell you this little story that I just heard recently. It was once understood that life doesn't always have to be easy. Not perfect, at least, anyways, right? There was a rabbi who lived in New Jersey, near Morristown, near the town my wife is from, Medina's from, and there was a rabbi, his name was Rabbi Siegel. He's passed away already, and his son runs a, still today, his son runs an AM and the JM and the AM, it's called. It's Jewish Music and the AM. It's a Jewish radio station every morning, I think, for 3 hours. Lovely Jewish music, and he talks, and it's very beautiful. Anyway, so his father, Rabbi Siegel, was a prominent rabbi in New Jersey, and he was very close with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He wasn't a Chabad follower necessarily, but he was very close to me. He had many private audiences with him. And from time to time, he used to go to Russia, and he would travel a lot, and from time to time, the Rebbe would call him in, ask to see him, and he would ask him that on his travels, he should do certain things for him, and he should accomplish certain missions. I've heard this because after the Rebbe passed away, he gave a eulogy 30 days later, and told the story. And he said one time the Rebbe called him in, and he was on a very important trip. I think it was to Russia at the time, you know, when it was still former Soviet Union and under communism and so on. He said he has no idea how the Rebbe knew that he was taking this trip, but anyway, he said he called him in, and he asked him to do something. He gave him a very complex mission to do for him when he was traveling. When he came back from the overseas, he went into the Rebbe to report back. And he told him that I accomplished the mission, right? And then he added to the Rebbe that he speak to the Rebbe in Yiddish. He added to the Rebbe zol wissen, the Rebbe should know that it was extremely challenging. Extremely challenging, this mission. So he says that the Rebbe looked at him with his twinkling eyes and he said to him, Rabbi Siegel, he said in Yiddish, sind wenn, hat er gemacht a Kontrakt mit dem Ewigen, he says. Since when did you make a contract with God that life is going to be easy? It's an interesting perspective. Like in previous times, it was like understood that things are challenging. We're here to work hard. Now, obviously, we pray for only good. We pray to God not to be tested, and everyone should be blessed. And we live in a blessed generation, and we should be good. We should be okay. We also have to remember that not everything has to go smoothly. And when things don't go smoothly, we need to train our minds to look at the positive. I think I've shared this with you before. My grandfather, Rabbi Eloy, he was an extremely, I always look at him, I remember him as an extremely healthy human being. I don't mean physically, he was physically healthy too, but he was just a very well-balanced, and he had a great sense of self, and he could laugh at himself, and he was a great Torah scholar, and he helped people, but he knew how to take a rest. Also, he was like very balanced and very, very, very content. I think talking about contentment, he was an extremely content person, a very, very healthy individual. When I was very, very young, I always thought that he had a good life because that's what he was. He was just a very good person. Only when I got older, I realized what kind of rough life he had when he was young. He lost his mother to starvation when he was a young boy. In the shtetl, it was poverty. His family was extremely poverty-stricken. He really wanted to desperately learn in yeshiva, and he was forced to go and work at a very young age. Eventually, he ran away from home because he really wanted to learn in yeshiva. Everything was difficult for him, right? And he was like the happiest person. But it's just, because it was different in that generation. People didn't focus. But there are real challenges. And those challenges are legitimate. And they're real, right? But it's a shift of the mind. It's a choice that we make sometimes when things are challenging. It's not easy. But that's how we maintain that strategy and that perspective to train ourselves to look at the positive. Which, of course, goes into the whole concept of the power of gratitude. And that's why people today talk about gratitude journals and identifying gratitude, right? And that's why there's times that we have to really sit down and say, okay, what is going right? What's my blessings in my life, right? So the other day I had this thought while I was davening, actually, right? And I was trying to concentrate on the words. It's always hard, you know, when your mind wanders. And I was doing the Amidah. I've got to share this with you because I think it's a very powerful message. The Amidah, I don't know if you know this, but the weekday Amidah is structured into three parts. First couple of blessings is just like a warming up session where we praise God, we connect to God, so we acknowledge the greatness of God, the greatness of our forefathers, and so on and so forth, the holiness of God and so on. Then we spend 13 blessings asking God for our personal requests, which is the definition of prayer. And that's okay, we're supposed to do that. If we're missing something, we have to ask God. If we're missing health, we have to ask God, Refa'enu, God please heal us. If we're missing sustenance, if we're missing livelihood, we're supposed to ask God, Barei Chaleinu. bless the fields. There should be good rains. There should be good culture. There should be the economy should prosper. So we should have comfort. We should be able to have economic success. It's all part of the Amidah. There's a general blessing called Shema Kolenu that if we haven't been covered by one of the blessings, we can kind of think about it in that prayer where God just listens to our voice. Says, I've got a long shopping list. You know, this one needs their child needs to get married. This one needs nachas. This one needs help. This one needs shalom bayit. Whatever the person needs, right? So then those 13 blessings come to an end. And then we have the last three blessings. And the first one of the last three blessings is Mordim Anachnu Lach. We thank God, right? And in that blessing of thanking God, we say some really powerful things. We say, God, we thank you. We thank you for taking care of us. We're giving of our life to you. And we thank you Al Nisecha Shebechol Yom, on the miracles that you do for us every day, the Al Nifla Otecha, on the wondrous things that you do, Shebechol Eit, at all times, Erev, Vavoker, Vetzarayim, evening, morning, and afternoon. So it hit me. It's a very interesting phenomenon, right? We just spent 13 blessings telling God what we're lacking, essentially, right? God, my bank account is not full enough. I don't feel well. My child doesn't feel well. I need this, I need that, I need this. We have a long shopping list, which is legitimate. Okay, we're supposed to pray to God. We need something, we shouldn't need the wrong things. We should always pray we should need the right things. But okay, we try our best, obviously, and we pour out our heart to God. We just finish this, and then we say, by the way, God, I want to thank you for all the amazing miracles you do for me. All the wonders that are there every single day, evening, afternoon, evening, morning, and afternoon, right? And I thought this is exactly the point. Because when we spend 13 blessings telling God what we're missing, which is legitimate, it's obviously a danger that we start to experience discontentment. And thinking, falling into the trap and saying, you know, and when, by the way, God, when you give me all these 13 things, then I'm going to serve you. Then I'm going to be grateful. And then I'm going to be happy. No. As soon as we finish asking for all the things we need, but God, I do recognize that there's amazing miracles in my life. I do recognize what I do have. I recognize everything you've given me. I recognize that some of these things are miraculous. Some of these things are wondrous. And I don't lose sight of that. And that's an amazing formula of prayer. That notwithstanding that I'm going to pour out my heart and ask for everything that I need, but I still am grateful. And I still highlight and focus on those miraculous and amazing things that I do have. And I choose to focus on them and to use them to live a day of meaning and purpose. You know, there's a famous little Yiddish story they tell about, but it's apparently an actual social experiment that was done. I don't know if that's true or not, but this is what they say. That they gathered a bunch of people and arranged them in a circle. It's also a perspective to bear in mind, right? And they asked everyone to write on a piece of paper all their personal challenges. And everyone wrote all the things that are going wrong in their life. Okay. Then they were sealed in envelopes and put in the middle. And then the moderator announced, now you have a choice. You can select a random envelope or you can keep your own. And without exception, everyone chose to keep their own. Right? Because you know what? Also perspective to bear in mind is everyone has what they call in Yiddish a pekel. You know what pekel means? Like a, everyone has challenges. And we don't want everyone else's challenges. We have to take the ones God gave us and make them work. Right? King Solomon says, and this is the point, right? That it is a choice. King Solomon says that there's a famous phrase in one of King Solomon's works, I think it's Proverbs, which says, Tov lev mishteh tamid, a person who has a good heart, a person who is pursuing inner happiness, is always happy. But what people don't know is that verse has a first part, the first half of the verse. And the first half of the verse says, Kol Yemei and what do I do with it? It says that it talks about the person who's poverty stricken and broken, and then it says about Tov Lev Mishta Tamid. In other words, do we view our circumstances as the defining guide of how we're gonna feel, or do we bring our feeling from the inside? Do we choose our perspective? That's the choice that we have to make. Another just one thing before we wrap up. This, of course, is very much emphasized in the, we don't only end the day with gratitude, we start with gratitude, right? And we realize that One of the ways to also develop this idea is to remove, again, another problem in today's society, is a sense of entitlement. Because everything goes well, so the more things go well, the more entitled we become. Almost like God owes us a good day, right? That's why we actually don't even end the day with gratitude. We start the day of gratitude. We talk about the famous blessings of gratitude that we make every morning, where we thank God for the smallest of things. We thank God for having clothes to put on. We thank God for being able to walk, to be able to see, to be able to get out of bed, all that kind of thing. Why? Because one of the ways that we have to start the day with is to recognize, you don't owe me anything. I thank you. I have to be grateful. No one owes us anything. And God doesn't owe us anything either. But He gives us every day. Every day, we start the day fresh. We can walk. We can get out of the bed. We can hopefully do something today. We can have clothes to wear. We can hear. We can see. Right? And we start the day with that. Besides the mordim that we say in the Amidah, besides the gratitude journal we make at night, but we also start by recognizing that we actually have a lot of blessings. And a lot of blessings is the ones that we have to make, use those blessings to make the day work. Maybe I'll add some more concepts to this to next week. We're running out of time. But what I did want to say is the following. As I started with, that we're celebrating Rona's birthday today. And I need to tell, I mean, this is obvious, but I want to share with everyone, of course, that to me personally, Rona's an inspiration. Because Rona is exactly what we just talked about. Everyone goes through challenges. Rona's had her fair challenges throughout life and even recently. But she has this amazing ability, even when she's such a young person, to work through it and then to say, you know what? I'm going to make this work. I'm going to find good. I'm going to say more day ani, as you always tell me. In the morning, I'm going to thank God for the day and I'm going to find good to do. Might be now playing music for your friends or other people, whatever it is. Any circumstance I'm in, I'm going to make a choice and I'm going to make it work. And I think for me, first of all, it's exactly what we've been talking about. So if you want to have an example, our homework for the week, by the way, is to be like Rona. Meaning every single day. No, seriously. Without even knowing anyone's circumstances, everyone in this room is going to have some challenge in the coming. I hope not. But we all have challenges, even small ones, right? And our homework is, first of all, what are the good things in our life? And second of all, how are we going to make it work? If you want to know how to do it, ask our birthday girl. She'll explain how. Yeah, please. And if you're able to inspire us for many, many more years.
Amen. Look, I'm not a speech maker. I can just tell you, well, if you all know, life's road is not a tarred road. It's pretty bumpy. And I've gone over very bumpy times. And last year was not a good year for me, as the rabbi knows, but I'm not going to tell him again. But I wake up every morning, Mordeh Ani, and then I run to the curtain, I draw the curtain that I can still see the light. Aww. That's what I've been doing for most of my life, because I've had problems with my eyes for many, many years. So I play the piano. I'm not a pianist, but I can play the piano. And now that after what happened to me last year, I'm now in a very good place with wonderful people looking after me. And I am so grateful. My best friend is a lady of 101. And I know that she can sing. So I make her, they pull her to the piano, and I make her sing. And then everybody claps. And we all sing. And that's what made me happy. And I'm very grateful in my life to have met people like Rabbi and Mrs. Garari. Yes. Rabbi.
It's okay.
And I'm thankful to be here. I'm thankful I can still come. I don't see all of you clearly, but it doesn't matter. I know you're there. And I can just be grateful. Yes. And thankful, and that I wake up in the morning and I can still see the light.
For many, many more years. Amen.